Good evening. Welcome to today's Forest Call. We are really honored and excited to have Moni and Alberto join us all the way from Spain to share their story with us. And we also have a special guest moderator today, Manisha, and joining her will be our very own farmer, Audrey. Manisha and Audrey introduce Moni and Alberto and share a little bit more of their story with us. I wanted to also introduce our wonderful moderators today. Manisha is one of the service-based volunteers, rock stars that does a lot behind the scenes. You know, all the daily good articles that we receive in our inbox every morning. Manisha does a lot to search for those articles and edit them, and she's used to work on building syndication partnerships, and she was one of our Forest Call guest speakers a few months ago herself. So it's great to have you here today as a moderator, Manisha. And the co-moderator, Audrey, is one of our very own farmers, so I'm sure a lot of you on this call are used to hearing her voice and her beautiful reflections every Saturday and reading her beautiful write-ups. So with that, I will let them go ahead and start the second part of the call.
Great. Thanks, Bella. This is Manisha. Thanks for that super generous introduction from a very dedicated farmer yourself. I will start with introducing Moni and Alberto, our deeply honored guests today. So Moni is born, she was born in Canada to a Lebanese family, and you know, had gone through sort of interesting upbringing, and at a certain point in her life was engaged in the marketing world in the software industry, which was pretty booming in the 1990s. And something shifted, and she had decided to further explore the themes of peace and justice. And so that began her walk or her journey over to the other side of the world, to Egypt and to some Mediterranean countries. Eventually, she found herself on the Camino de Santiago. It's also known as the Path of St. James, and that's in northern Spain. It's about 800 kilometers long, and, you know, it's a long trek, but Moni didn't stop there. She kept on going and just really felt moved, and along the way, along her journey, she met Alberto. So Alberto is from Spain, and, you know, his childhood, I guess he could speak more to it if it comes up in the calls. It's sort of different from Moni's, but his journey sort of intersected with hers when he had decided, you know, from working in the insurance industry that he just wanted to spend more time exploring life and meaning. And so he met Moni at the end of the world, which is at the end of the trail at the Camino, and from there just really internally felt like he had to continue walking. And so they did together through Europe from Rome to Jerusalem, over 5,000 kilometers, which, you know, is just an incredible span to walk. And along the way, they encountered dozens and hundreds of stories of kindness and generosity and love, really. And they're here today to share all that with us. And so we're delighted. And I think we could just get straight into into the concept. There's probably a lifetime worth of things to share.
Okay, well, we're ready. We're ready to begin. Yes.
Thank you. It was a wonderful presentation.
Yes.
Great. So I'll begin maybe just by getting some background information. You know, both of you had stable and pretty secure careers that conventionally we define as successful. And a lot of people who are in that situation where they have stability and comfort experience a yearning for something greater, but a few people actually, you know, really take the risks to fulfill their deepest needs. So why did you decide to do it, and how did you muster up the courage to leave everything behind and go on this walk?
I guess I'll start. As you mentioned earlier, I was actually in the marketing world. I was actually at Microsoft for many years in Canada, and then 1 year in the corporate head office in Redmond. And it was actually a personal situation that kind of threw me into the questioning of the, you know, why did this happen to me? I was in a relationship. I was married, and my husband at the time just announced that he was leaving the relationship, which threw me into a bit of an existential crisis in a way, because it was like, what had I done to deserve this? I had played by society's rules. I had done all the things I was supposed to do. So why was this happening to me? And so that, thanks to that experience, although I didn't see it at the time, it began kind of a questing, a search for meaning, a search for self, a search for identity. And the more I began to kind of question who I am and what am I here for, the more I also began to question my work life. And so, you know, I was learning I was opening to a whole new world with the books that I was reading, like self-help books, spirituality, new age, all of which were introducing me to a way of thinking and a way of being that I truly longed to live. But as much as I wanted, you know, to be this peace and to be this harmony in my everyday life, in the corporate world where the demands were constant and the pressures were insistent, it was hard to do that. And I think I stayed for a longer time than maybe I should have, although I know that there are no shoulds. I thought that I could do it. I thought I could bring my spirituality, my way of seeing the world, my state of kind of increasing happiness into my work life. And I could for just short periods of time, but then I couldn't maintain it. And little by little, I just saw that I was just suffering too greatly. And I think there comes a point, I think in every one of us, where the amount of suffering that we are going through is just makes you question, is this really worth it? Is the job, is the security that I have really worth all the suffering that I'm going through? And I think I struggled with that for more than a year before I finally said, you know what, I can't take it anymore. I can't, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. But I know it's going to be something that has meaning and that is more in alignment with the kind of person that I'm choosing to become, the kind of life that I wish to create, which is a life that has meaning, a life that is bringing something of value into the world. I didn't know what that meant. I had no clue what shape that would take, but I was ready to take the steps and I guess risk a little bit in letting just quitting my job and moving into the unknown, being guided by something which I wanted to develop, which was intuition, being guided by omens, being guided by synchronicities. And that was a whole new way of living for me. But this was something that I truly wanted to develop in me as a person. And so those synchronicities, those omens that I started to pay more attention to eventually guided my steps. Eventually they brought me to Egypt. They brought me to the Mediterranean, as you mentioned, but eventually they brought me to the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain. And on the Camino is when I really began in earnest to ask for guidance. I guess for me, the Camino was a living entity. It was something that I could communicate with in a way. It was an energy that I could feel, but not really. It was more an energy that I felt whispered to me when I was prepared to listen. And that was part of the experience of me learning to be open and learning to be a pilgrim, which is to walk in trust, to walk in openness, to walk in love in a way, knowing and trusting that all that I needed would come to me. And that in itself is a journey. But the Camino was the place where I started to do that in earnest and to start to ask in earnest and ask to be shown clarity for how to create this life with meaning. And what emerged for me was that I wanted to dedicate my life to peace. And although I didn't know what that would look like at the time, the Camino would eventually reveal to me what that would look like. But what it revealed to me was that my heart's desire was to dedicate myself to peace. And as I was walking, my final day of walking, which, as you mentioned, I arrived in a town which is called Finisterre, which literally means the end of the world. That day, I met Alberto. on my final day of walking.
That was my final day of walking too.
Yeah.
So we meet that day. I abandoned the security of my job, like money, but I abandoned for another, well, similar reasons, but more in concrete, because I was not happy with what I was doing. I was working in the insurance industry because I fell there for casuality.
By coincidence.
I don't believe in coincidence. I think after now I see my past, I believe that all in some way needed to be that way for me to wake up to something greater. Then I fell in that job very young. And it really was a way to feel safe. Was a way to create a life like I thought that everybody needed to create. So you needed to create a formal job, a respectable job, where you get a good salary and where you buy a house, you buy a car, you marry with your girlfriend from our life. And this was the idea that I had at that time, and everybody around me had at that time. But this didn't make me happy because the job that I was doing I didn't really like it. Like I had the spirit of an artist. I always loved it to draw and to sculpt. But I was taught that that was not a way of living. Really, it was not a way to live and to gain money, to make money. And then I was taught very, very early, very young, that that was a hobby, not a real job.
Yeah.
Then I never really tried to work in that really inspired me to do with my art something like a living. But for that reason, I was working in the insurance industry for a while. But when the more that I was working there, the more miserable that I felt. Until a point that I decided, I felt that I couldn't live more in that way. And then I started to think that I didn't know how, but I needed to do something. I needed to change my life, because if I needed to continue living in that way, I prefer not to live.
Yeah. So how did walking on... Oh, sorry, did you want to say more?
No, sorry, what was your question?
I was going to ask, how did walking on the Camino de Santiago kind of change that for you?
Well, really, that the change came before the Camino. The change came with a realization when I did was surrender my fear to what to do with my life and to risk and to say, okay, I don't want to continue doing this because I don't want to do this. When I decided to do that and I surrendered all my fears, because my fear was the first thing that my girlfriend, that we were going to marry, she was going to leave me, that my friends were not going to understand me, that society was going to point me with the finger to say, this guy is crazy, he's going to leave a formal job that I was full-time and all that. Mm-hmm. Then when I surrendered to that and I said, I don't care, I don't go to continue. Then was when a door opened that I didn't expect. And a new vision of life came to me. A vision of life where I discovered that I was not a victim of the world, but I could change my life. And I could do with my life something more positive. And I really could fulfill my dreams. The vision of life came to me through a self-help book. But that, you know, it's very common or very typical to find this through self-help books. But at that time, I didn't know that. I didn't know that way to understand life. And that book would help me, because I was ready to be helped. I was open to be helped. And then it was after this to find, by the way, this book was the book of Louise Hay.
Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your
You
Life.
You Can Heal Your Life. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
This was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
What happened after this? I when I changed my vision of life, and especially about myself, and I started to believe in myself that I could do something different, and that life will support myself. Not I was not a victim of life, but all the contrary, life was there to support myself,
support
to support me if I had an appropriate attitude. when I discovered that and I started to live that, because I started to live that, was when 1 year after I found El Camino de Santiago. And with the thing I went to it. This was my first time that El Camino showed me that I was not the only person that had that insight and that search in some way, that search in life for myself and for meaning. I 1 year after I came back to El Camino again, feeling for that I needed to know more and to discover more myself, because this is a way that doesn't finish. That life is a way of self-discovery, how we see that. And in this second Camino de Santiago was where I found money in the end of the world. And I, when I went to the second Camino of Santiago, I was looking too for a new way to a new goal in my life, a something new to do, where to direct my life, and to find money at the end of the world. I really was something that in that moment when I met her, I didn't discover. She was talking about her way for peace to Jerusalem, but I didn't know her. She didn't know me. I didn't think that this was my way at that moment, even when I loved the idea. But 2 months later, we serendipitously, that how we are talking about serendipity,
yeah.
We meet again in Bonn, in
Germany.
Germany, unexpectedly, when she was going to start her way to Jerusalem, her walk to Jerusalem from Rome. We meet there a week early that she was going to start the walk. And in that moment, I felt that that was a call for me. That was a call for to join her in that way for peace. That for me was a way for peace, but a way of for inner peace, or a way for to discover more about myself, about life, about everything.
Yeah.
I just want to actually transition to the Rome to Jerusalem walk.
Yeah.
That's your bigger journey. That's the one that you started on together, and it's the longer walk. And I guess we've got two questions here. Why did you decide to go from Rome to Jerusalem, and what were some of the instances that strike you as being most profound along the way?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that how it started. I was, as I mentioned, I was on the Camino and I was kind of asking for clarity and direction. And I knew that it had something to do with peace, because it was something that kept repeatedly coming forward to me. But it was one day, kind of one of those moments where I had finished walking. It was a long day, and I was sitting beside some other pilgrims and listening to them sharing, the experiences of the day. And they began, one of the pilgrims started speaking about this Camino de Santiago being called the Way of Strength. It's the place where you face your deepest fears, where you look at your demons and you try to heal them on this Camino. That's why it's called the Way of Strength, or the Way of the Sword. There's also another Camino, another pilgrimage, which is to Rome, which is called the Way of the Heart. And this is a path of love, but not path of love as in physical, but kind of the unconditional love, love of divinity, however you define divinity and unconditional love. And finally, there is a third pilgrimage, which is to Jerusalem. And that is called the Way of the Soul. And as soon as I heard that Jerusalem was the Way of the Soul, something in me just went, boop. It was just like a spark was awakened in me that just said, Jerusalem, the way of peace. This is what I have to do. It's the way of the soul. It's a way for me to know my soul. I had no idea exactly, again, what that meant or how that would take form. I just knew that I would walk to Jerusalem. I really didn't feel an interest in walking to Rome, but it seemed appealing to me to start in Rome, which was the destination of the way of the heart. The way, the place where that is imbued with all the energies of other pilgrims who have arrived there, walking this way of the heart, and to start from the heart and walk to find the soul. And so at a kind of esoteric or symbolic level, to me, it was an encounter towards my own soul. And so that's kind of how I took it. And since it was peace was what attracted me, I thought, well, what better place to carry peace to than Jerusalem? And so that was kind of the...
And your background.
And my background, obviously, being Lebanese and still having family in Lebanon, the whole conflict was a part of our lives, right? I grew up with people in the living room talking about, the whole situation and how the conflict was affecting one group and then the other. And so the complexity and the antiquity of the problem and all the solutions that were being proposed were something that was a constant part of my life, I guess, in my childhood. And, you know, I grew up with a certain concept of what peace was, you know, that you had to, you know, fight for peace. You had to be, fight for justice.
Doesn't
you have to be,
exist.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist. Peace.
There's no peace
without
justice.
And no, it was very common.
Yeah. And, you know, once my spiritual awakening and journey began, I really started to question that, you know, what is justice? What is peace? And do you really, they were concepts that just didn't, fighting for and against injustice just didn't seem to make any more sense to me, but I didn't know what the alternative was.
Yeah, what else?
What other alternative is there? And so the pilgrimage became also an opportunity to also really learn what peace meant to me. And since this was in 2001, I was on the Camino in July of 2001, and I had decided I would walk to Jerusalem. But, you know, when you're on the Camino, and those of you who will walk it will discover it, it's a very magical place. Everything is very possible on the Camino. All the grandest plans seem wonderful on the Camino until you walk off. And then you get back into the real world, and it's like, what? You're a woman. You want to walk alone along the side of the road. You know, the idea doesn't seem as magical after that until 9/11. And when 9/11 hit,
1 month later,
1 month later, 2 months later, for me, it became like, okay, I may not have the answers for peace. I may not know what to do, but I can walk and I can carry a message that, you know, I don't know what peace means, but I do know that I have the power to create peace and that peace really has to begin within me.
Yeah. And so you had a message on your backpack.
Yes.
Tell us more about what that said and how people responded to it.
Well, the message was, we wrote the words walking to Jerusalem for peace. That was on my backpack. It said, because mine was slightly bigger, it said walking to Jerusalem for peace in the language of every country that we were in. And for Alberto, his said walking for peace.
Yeah, because for me, it was not so much about Jerusalem, but was about peace in general and inner peace at the moment. And then we thought that was good that she had in her way how she really felt to her, and I had my message only walking for peace.
Yeah. And it was that coincidental meeting in Germany when I had decided, okay, I'm going to walk. I was still in Europe. I was still, you know, there trying to figure out how I was going to get to Rome when I got in contact with a common friend of ours, a pilgrim who I had met, and I came in contact with Alberto again. And this time, as I was on my way to Rome, when I spoke to him about it, this time it resonated with him. And he felt kind of a similar calling to walk with me, even though, you know, we really didn't speak each other's language. I didn't speak Spanish. He didn't speak English.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
Yeah. And so it was very much a calling that came from a place that was much deeper for him as well. So he needed to tie up his life in Germany. And so I decided to start alone. I started in Rome and I began walking, and he joined me 10 days later. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point of walking together that, you know, as common a vision as we shared about peace, no two people are ever alike. And so our perspectives and our ways of seeing
our situation
exactly were very different.
Very
like I had planned, I had enough money saved up that I could stay in hostels, you know, pretty much the entire way. He didn't have that kind of money. And so one of the first conversations we needed to have, one of the first discussions that we had, actually arguments, was around money. He wanted to basically go call on spiritual centers, you know, monasteries, convents, churches, whatever was on our way, and explain to them that we are pilgrims. And
we are pilgrims for peace, and we need a roof.
A roof over our
heads. Over our
heads. Yeah, that's
nothing
all.
Else. We have money. We have food.
Yeah.
We only need a place to sleep for the cold of the night.
Exactly.
And that was my idea to do it. Because at the beginning, we didn't think in that. But Moni, very soon, she realized that was opportunity to know people. And to give to the opportunity to involve people and to help the way of peace. Then what at the beginning was like a situation that was forced to us because we didn't find another way to do it. After we saw that was a blessing, because staying in the houses of people or in monasteries or churches open to discussions and to explanations that really we didn't think where this could or
lead us to.
Lead us. Yeah,
right.
I was,
so what
I was
kind of,
thinking. Yeah.
What kind of people did you meet along the way? I mean, I'm sure you've met so many, but do any particular individuals stand out?
Well, I can tell you certain situations that that really stand out for me, and maybe a bit for Alberto as well. Our situations weren't always easy, you know, just because we were calling on the door of a, you know, of a priest or of a whatever, that doesn't mean that we received shelter every single night. And in the beginning, I think the work of peace, especially for me, because this is why this the walk was such a powerful journey for me. I needed to face a lot of my own prejudices about and my expectations about how things should be. So whenever someone turned us away or whenever someone didn't embrace this idea that we were walking for peace, I became very angry and I became very judgmental, especially like when a priest would turn us away. How could a priest turn us away? Isn't this his job? Like to kind of take us in and help us? And so I needed to let go of a lot of expectations that I had around how things should be before I could allow kind of peace and a different energy to settle within me, which is an energy of just accept things as they are. And if someone turns you away, that doesn't mean they're rejecting you. That just means you're just meant to be somewhere else. And in that exchange of them rejecting you, there's something needed to happen. I needed to learn something. They needed to learn something. And we needed to move on. So we had situations that I think for me were definite testing points that I needed, or opportunities to really release some judgments that I had. The
Do
people
you have any
that
particular examples of like a situation where you really learn or you really face something?
I can tell you that the one, because the situations where we were turned away, and that happened a couple of times when we were in Italy. We were still in the beginning of our walk.
I want to clarify that these situations were the minimum. Usually people received us very well, and people was very great in the streets and everywhere. But really it happened too that some people reject us or to say no, simply no.
Yeah,
sorry.
But you have to think, I didn't need to call on a church door
for money was
to ask
difficult.
For help. I didn't need to ask for help. I was following Alberto because I figured, well, how could I go sleep in a hostel knowing that he was going to sleep on a cold floor somewhere? Because really, when a priest or someone accepted us or took us in and gave us shelter, oftentimes it was to sleep in a church hall. We slept on the floor. We slept on
tables.
We slept on, you know, wherever we were given shelter.
In a garage,
we slept in, you know, in wherever we were given shelter. And so for me, it was very, I was following Alberto's way, but although I didn't need to. And so for me, what stands out, there's actually one night where we were rejected 2-3 times in a row.
Yeah, that was the
most
more difficult
night.
Night.
It was on, it was Christmas.
It was Christmas Eve.
It was Christmas Eve. It was
not
on
Christmas, not New Year's.
New Year's Eve. Eve.
Yeah.
It was New Year's Eve. And we were told to wait for a priest all day in this town. And we waited. And when it was like 5 o'clock in the evening. And he arrived and he said, sorry, I have nothing for you. You have to continue on. And because it was, we had both decided that we would walk everywhere and that we would not take a bus or a car, we decided, okay, well, let's just go ahead and walk to the next town. And the next town was a good like 10, 15 kilometers away. And we're walking at night. And so we're walking at night. It's winter. We didn't have reflective clothing on roads that were very slippery. And so
there was
snow and
ice
on the side of the road. And so when we got to the next town, it was kind of with the hope that, okay, they're going to receive us.
Yeah,
and by then,
and we really were very tired. The next town that we were
exhausted.
Started.
Yeah. Exhausted. And so we arrived and we find the house of the priest. We knock on his door. We explain that we're pilgrims. And with the biggest smile on his face, he says, I'm sorry, I'm not a hotel. Go look for something else. And at that point, it was the biggest devastation. It's like, how can you in all good conscience say no to me? And this is the second rejection now that night.
Yeah.
And it's now 7
well,
o'clock at night.
We didn't tell to him because we never say that to the people, but it's how you felt, no?
Yeah,
moment.
I was devastated. And so we said, okay, what do we do now? It's like, well, we're going to continue walking because it just so happened there was nothing in town. There was nothing. It was a small town. It was New Year's Eve. Everything was
Yeah,
closed.
we thought it to get even a in a
We
hostel,
went. No,
maybe
we
a
went.
room or something. But
There was no hostel.
was New Year Eve. There was no
No
hostel. It
hostel.
was
We
all
went
closed.
actually to the Carabinieri, which is like the police. We called
Yeah.
on the police and asked if we could sleep in a jail cell for the night. And
Wow.
they just kind of listened to us and said, "Why don't you
Oh.
just take a taxi to the next town?"
Well, speaking about, sleeping in a jail, that's just incredible. We're wondering if you had any moment where you felt threatened. I guess the stereotype is that a jail is a scary place. Was that threatening for you, or were there other moments like you felt
No,
guilty?
this is the thing. No, we
You
were
know, you.
never like physically our safety.
Yeah,
We never
one
felt
minute.
physically threatened
Exactly.
by in any country that we were in. On the
But you
contrary.
know, we had a thing with us. We had a thought with us. And always that we were walking, we always say to ourselves, we believe that people is good.
Yes.
And we believe that we attract good people to our life. And this was like some kind of a mantra
Yeah.
that we really believe it. This doesn't mean that we didn't feel fear in some occasions. So we doubted about this statement or these words. But really, we all the meetings that we have, they were positive meetings. Also, at least one thing is that people didn't believe in you
Yeah.
or reject you, but we never were in danger. And we passed
Yeah.
for countries very in a situation very
Yeah.
conflicted, but we never were in
Physical
danger.
danger, never. On the contrary, I think people, because this was around, you have to remember, this is around 9/11. There's a lot of fear, there's a lot of uncertainty that's going on around the world. And I think the fact that people saw us walking on the side of the road, just two people with a backpack walking, speaking about a message of, you don't have to wait for peace to come to you from the outside. You can do something for peace, even if it's through small acts of kindness, even if it's, especially if you look within yourself to create that within yourself and let it go out from there. It really touched people because
Yeah.
we weren't walking with, with any religious intentions. We weren't walking with any political intentions.
No
We were just,
support,
or
nothing.
support. We were just two ordinary individuals who were in their own way trying to contribute to the voices of peace, to the energy of peace. And we were doing that through walking. And I think seeing that really resonated with people. I think it gave them, because in so many situations, people would just come up to us and just give us hugs and just hug
Yeah.
us. And they would
And
cry.
cry with us.
Yeah. Without saying a word. And I think there was this need that
Of
people
hope.
needed to see of hope,
Yeah.
of just there, maybe we don't have the big answers, but at least we're taking the steps physically and kind of more emotionally, spiritually to try and create that peace. And so from that, what Alberto was saying, and that, we walked with the intention of, people are good and we will receive whatever we need to
Yeah.
help us on this journey. And we needed to have faith
Yeah, and to trust.
and to trust that everything would work out in our favor, even though there were moments that were very difficult. As I said, that night that we were rejected several times, we ended up finding shelter in an abandoned building. And it was just enough to con it was just closed enough to protect us from the freezing winds.
Yeah, but was a clean
It was
place.
clean,
Was
there was hay,
yeah,
there
was
was a wooden
yeah.
ramp that kind of we could sleep on that could protect us from the freezing ground, and we used our tent as a cover, the tent cover as a blanket because the pegs would not go through the frozen ground. They could set up a tent.
But
So,
the thing, one thing, that was the only night
yep.
that we didn't find a place that people received us. From all the first months that we were walking every day, arriving to a place that we didn't know, and
Yeah.
we don't know where we were going to sleep, always, we were received for
Yeah,
somebody.
somebody. We had shelter.
Wow. So one
Yes.
night and how many nights was that?
Well, this was in Italy, especially. I would say until we arrived to Greece is when we were asking kind of actively for calling on churches and
Yeah.
stuff like that. That would have been the first 6 months
Yeah,
of our
the first
walk.
6 months.
First 6 months
Wow.
of our walk.
Every day we had a
Every
shelter.
day, there was every day we had shelter, with the exception of that one night where we had to basically sleep outdoors. But even then, we
We
were
had a
protected. We
shelter,
had
yeah. And
shelter.
in some way we thought that was a gift from heaven
It was a
because
gift.
that place was very well and it was
Yeah.
very clean, but was better than many other places that we had to
That's
sleep like a shelter,
right.
maybe. Something like that.
Yeah.
So I have so many more questions about your pilgrimages.
Go ahead.
But I noticed we have about, we're in the last half hour now of the call. And so I know, time flies. So we want to open up, I want to ask so much more about the pilgrimage, but I'm also curious about so after the pilgrimage, how was the transition afterwards? Like, how did you, when you finished, when you got to Jerusalem, how did you, you know, how did you decide what to do next, and how did that take you to where you are now? I know that's a big question also, but generally speaking.
You know, I think I was walking to Jerusalem expecting to find all my answers and, you know, arrive in Jerusalem full of clarity and full of energy and contribute that energy of peace. But really, in the end, it was like arriving in Santiago and coming to the realization that it's not about the destination. It is about the journey. It is about the journey to get there and the revelations and the insights and the wisdom that you receive along the way. And because of that, the journey never ends. The pilgrimage, in a way, never ends. You know, we are still in our day-to-day life, still trying to apply the principles that we learned on this pilgrimage or on the Camino.
And the principles that we learn every day.
Exactly, in our everyday life.
We believe that life is a pilgrimage.
Yeah.
We believe that life is a journey itself. Then the way didn't finish, we didn't end in El Camino de Santiago, and the way didn't end in Jerusalem, and the way, I think, won't end, never.
Yeah.
It's life itself.
Yeah. Peace is both the journey and the destination. Love is both the journey and the destination. I think that what the destination does is give you the dream. It takes you out of your routine.
Yeah.
And it says, okay, go there and go on this pilgrimage and go on this search. And when you're outside of that routine, you are in a place that's a little bit more open. You're not carrying all the weight of all your day-to-day things that you think about.
Not the routine, no.
Exactly. You're outside the routine. And so if you're walking with that intention, you're much more open to receive, and you're much more open to be guided if you allow yourself to be guided, of course. And so I think that's what pilgrimage really does, is that it takes you out of your routine and it places you in situations and brings to you experiences that really make you reflect on who you are and what it is that you want to be and what it is that you want to contribute to the world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. This is
and our pilgrimage.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, our pilgrimage now includes a daughter.
Yep.
So, you know, we have that is a whole story in itself as well. But with a child now coming into our life, she also continues to be part of our spiritual practice, because any of you who are parents will know that patience is the number one thing that you have to work with a child. And so having Silvana in our lives really has been a great opportunity for us to continue to walk, in a way, metaphorically speaking, and to continue to apply these principles that we believe with her as well. And truly, we see her as one more pilgrim,
one more pilgrim,
of us who is walking this journey with us. You
and,
know?
And one more teacher or
yes.
daughter, like everybody, I think it's a teacher of love, especially, because
yes.
I have learned about love what I couldn't learn in any other way, thanks to have her in our life. Yeah.
Thank you. I also wanted to remind everybody to please press *6 to get in the queue if you had any questions. But I had I had several questions, but one of my questions just came up when you were talking about your daughter. I had no idea that you had a child. I'm not sure, you didn't say how old she is, but I'm very curious to know the journey with her.
Mm-hmm.
How did you how has she accepted the pilgrim life, and what kinds of questions does she have, you know, as a child, and how have her questions made you reflect yet again on what you thought you already knew? Because you know, we're constantly learning, and things that we think we know, we relearn them through fresh
that's
perspective.
True. Well, that's a great question, actually. No one has ever really asked us about that. Our daughter was born shortly after we finished our pilgrimage, and a kind of a curious coincidence. She was born exactly 2 years to the day after Alberto and I started walking together. Alberto and I began walking together December 5, 2001. She was born December 5, 2003.
Yeah, like was like this,
start a new walk with her. And so she now, obviously, you know, when she's very young, when she was a baby, I think with every parent, what comes out is this this desire to kind of to protect and to make sure that everything is okay and that all her needs are taken care of, and you're there, you're almost kind of, I don't like the word hovering, but you're there continually looking after her needs. And as she has gotten older, I think the work, especially for me, and I'll speak for me,
yeah,
has been to be less of a, how do I say this, less of a mother kind of on top of her, less of a protector, and more of a guide, in a way to kind of allow her to kind of make her mistakes, to allow her to experiment, allow her, obviously, without, you know, getting her into in danger,
to find her
path, in a way to kind
and her inner guidance to
get her to trust her own intuition, to those feelings that she has inside of her. She's starting to ask a lot of questions now. You know, about, she asks about death, for example. She wants to know what happens when you die.
She's 8 years old.
She's eight.
Now.
Yeah, she's already. She's eight.
She started
now
with that question the past year, no?
Last couple of years, probably about 2 years ago. She started speaking about. It came out as, you know, I don't want you to die. You know, I'm so scared that you and Daddy are going to die. And so we had to think about, well, how do we explain what we believe about death to her?
Yeah, because we didn't want to impose her or ideas either.
Yeah.
She's seen what we believe. We believe that there is a, for example, in this case, we believe that there is a life after life because we have experienced many, many things. But we didn't want to impose our ideas like this is that it is.
Yeah.
Then she hear us talking about, she see how the style of life that we have. But for another part, she's seen to the world around her. And she's being exposed to another different ideas and another different beliefs. And we explain to her that too, that there are many different ways to understand life. And our way is the way that we have get to understand and to believe that is,
yeah,
that is the way. Then she's drinking from us, but we are not putting her in a...
Yeah, we're not saying this is the only way.
The only way.
And this is the right way.
We are saying to her, you will choose your way.
Yeah.
The way that convinced you,
yeah,
will be your way.
Yeah, because for example, his mom is Catholic.
Yeah,
is very Catholic, and so
very traditional.
Very traditional. So she speaks of Jesus in a certain way, and you know, she's very respectful of our philosophies and our ideas. But she can't help it. You know, it just kind of slips out. You know, about her. You know, what she says about Jesus and Mary and all this, and it's beautiful in its own way. And so we're not discouraging that. We're saying to her, this is how your grandmother sees. It tries to explain this thing called love, this divinity, and
thing,
what God,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. She calls it Jesus. We call it love. This is something that is inside of you and all around you. And I said, people will give that different descriptions. They will call it different things, but everybody is trying to get to that same understanding,
yeah,
and to that same place of coming to this place, which we believe is love. The greatest force in the universe, which we teach her, is love. And it just, many people are just trying to get to it in different ways, and they give it different names.
But different interpretations of the same thing.
Exactly. And so, you know, I would like little, as she's getting older now, to start to introduce her to different philosophies so that she sees, for example, how does a Buddhist approach spirituality? How does someone who is a Hindu approach spirituality? How does a Muslim? How does a Christian? And so, you know, I feel that more and more our role is to be kind of guides and just say, well, here are the possibilities. And as you get older, you're going to have to make the choice that best fits you. And maybe it's just a mix of everything, and that's fine.
It's a calling for
wow.
Yeah.
This is
we
sad.
Can't,
I can,
and that's hard for me as a mom, let me tell you, to just not want to be protecting all the time.
Yeah.
And to trust.
And
yeah,
to trust that, you know, she's also here. She's a soul who has come on this journey with us as well, and that we are here for not to tell her the way, but to guide her so that she finds her own wisdom. And that's a hard thing because I don't have a lesson for that. I don't have the plan. It's a, you know, day by day, moment by moment, whatever comes up in that moment, you know? Alberto, is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, totally agree with that.
Yeah, she's going to, I maybe one day I'll meet her. She's a really blessed child, and I could already see that she has so much wisdom.
Thank you. That's beautiful guidance.
That's really powerful. We do have a couple of people that have burning questions for you, so I'll move on to the next topic.
Of course.
We will try to be
brief.
Brief. Yeah.
Oh, hello. This is Nipun again, calling from Bakersfield, California. My question is around one of the things you guys talked about was this edge of, you know, Alberto saying, I don't want to use money, or I want to use very little of it, and Moni having saved up some. And I was wondering, how has your relationship to money changed after the pilgrimage, whether it's around accumulation or not accumulating, or especially when you have an eight-year-old thinking about Savannah's future or even your own future and your own retirement. And like, how has the pilgrimage and just being grilled in that process of constant change affected the way you view money?
Well, I can tell you that for me, money, it was not something that, I didn't grow up in a family that had a lot of money. I grew up in an immigrant family that, you know, came to Canada with very little. And so I grew up with little money, with the belief that you had to work really hard to, you know, to make money. You had to sacrifice, you know, that money didn't grow on trees. And so you really had to work hard to make your money. And I followed that, and I believed that for a long time. But I was also someone who, I can't even explain it. All I can say is whenever I have followed my heart and taken a leap of faith to do something that I really felt drawn to, money has just come. Money has just simply arrived because I was following my heart and trusting that whatever I needed would come to me. And so for me, I can tell you that on this pilgrimage, money, the issue of money for me was learning how to accept and how to receive money, because money appears in many ways. It's not just somebody giving you some bills. It is about, it's an energy. And so people want to give in many ways, whether it's through physical money, whether it's to invite you to a meal, whether it's to offer you clothing, it is an energy. And so for me, the lesson that I had to learn on my pilgrimage was how to receive graciously, because I was someone who was accustomed to always to give. I had no problem giving other people, giving of myself, giving of my time, giving of my money. I gave. But really, I think part of the journey is learning how to receive and allow others the pleasure of giving.
Yeah, for me, the fact of money is, I think today, one of the reasons that I quit my job too is because I didn't believe in the insurance company, because I didn't believe in to buy security. You know, I didn't believe in the security how today we believe, or the society believe. I think the problem is that we need the money, or when we put the money like a god. Or like something that is impresentable.
That's important. You cannot live without. Yeah.
And then in some way, when I walk without money, in some way, especially was to show myself that I really didn't need the money.
Right.
And if I had no money anyways, I could find my way, and I could live without that.
Yeah.
But once I show myself that money was not a need, was not a necessity, I wanted to be sure too that I didn't want to demonize money.
Yeah.
For money became a tool. O sea, and money is a good tool. So it's a tool for that you exchange, and you can buy products, or you can get what you want.
Yeah.
You know, but always that you don't create a divinity of
around
God,
money.
Or,
it's a tool,
money.
Right? It's an instrument, like anything in your hands, right? You can use it for whatever means you wish. And so it's energy, it's a tool, and in hands that are trying to bring love into the world and trying to bring an energy that is uplifting into the world, it just becomes an instrument can use.
Yeah, but I think the real problem is when we think that we need it. Then I think it's a wonderful thing that you are doing, guys.
Yeah.
That you are doing, guys, that we did in some moment too. that is that we don't need money. We really don't need almost anything.
Yeah.
We need especially to trust in ourselves and to trust in life, and everything that we need come to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we're just as happy walking with a backpack, because that was also a test for me too, you know, to leave everything behind. So, you know what, I can live from wearing, you know, the same clothes every single day for, you know, 6 months or a year, or I don't need to have all the comfort.
And
now,
all the luxury.
And all the luxuries. I don't need it. I have them. They're nice to have, but I'm not attached to them. And I think that's the key. It's like, they're nice to have, you know, it's nice to have, but I'm not attached to it. If I were to lose all of it tomorrow, I could be just fine with the little that I had, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think I know you guys have written a book that I've heard about, but I think you could write a book even around this. It's just so much wisdom there, a lot to think about. And
yeah, truly, you know, the book that we wrote, we had to, you know, you too, Nipun, I'm sure, in your journey, if you were to try to just write a book to summarize that, you have to just, it's difficult. And so we chose the incidents that truly touched us and that truly made us reflect on our inner journeys. But that's not to say that, you know, we are offering answers. What we're saying is we went on a journey, and the journey gave us some things to consider, just as I'm sure any journey would give you food for thought. But we have so much that we can draw on and so much that we can talk about that in one book we couldn't possibly, you know, put it all. You know, we just chose some key things that I think any pilgrim, anyone who chooses to walk an inner journey would eventually need to reflect on, you know?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to move to the next caller.
Thank you, Vela, the Moni and Alberto. This is Prakash calling from Heart of the Bay, a city called Hayward, San Francisco Bay.
Hello, Prakash.
Hello.
Hello. Hola.
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 Thank you. So my question is, how can each of we be the peace we wish to see in the world?
Oof. Just a light question like that. No, Prakash, how can we be the peace? Well, you know, I think I'll speak for myself. I think the moments in which you find yourself in states of peace, the moments that you are in joy, in moments of joy, whether that joy is by taking a walk, or that joy is in doing something to help another, whether that joy or that peace comes from listening to music or dancing, I think anything that lifts the heart and that inspires you in a way is allowing you to be the peace or to be the love, because you are putting forward into the universe a beautiful energy. And that is the energy that is lifting everything around it. So I think when you're following your passions, when you are living from the heart, when you are someone who is a heart-centered individual, then I think you are being the peace. You are emitting an energy which goes out into the universe and which attracts and creates more of that. So for me, it is about that.
Yeah, and I think only with the fact that you had the intention to be peace in the world, and you want, only with the intention you are moving the machine that create peace. When you have the intention, and especially when you are open to not only the way that you think that you can reach peace, but you are open to learn more and to grow and to learn more about yourself, and you are open to change with that you are going to learn. I think when you have the intention and you are open to change and ready to do whatever thing that you think that you need to do, is you are being a channel of peace and a channel of whatever you want to be.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your gift of this time and your energy, and I really loved. We will be fine with whatever little we have. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Prakash.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was really nice.
Thank you, Prakash. That was an awesome question. I think Manisha actually had another question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. there's been some really great sharing around here, but one thing that I'm really struck by is that, you know, you came off this walk and you went back into living in Spain and then living in Canada, and it seems like a lot changed on your walk, but, you know, what has changed in relation to this places and circumstances and people that you find yourself in outside of your walk now, and how does that affect your interactions, the people that, you know, surround you?
Yeah.
What has changed?
Well, you know, I can tell you that in the beginning, when we finished our walk, we planned to live in Canada. We went back to Canada. In fact, our daughter was born in Canada. But the more we stayed there, and maybe more for me than for Alberto, I really felt like a fish out of water. I really felt that I didn't fit in anymore. I was still kind of trying to digest all that had happened on our pilgrimage. And at the same time, the world that I came back to, my friends, my family, who all deeply loved me, didn't understand me and really seemed to be almost afraid to ask the questions. Because I think the moment that, you know, you ask the questions, they're really profound questions about, you know, how did this walk change you? What did you learn? And how does it make you feel? In a way, they're having to question their own lives. And I think a lot of people aren't ready to even ask that question, because the moment that you ask that question, it's like you're grabbing a thread, and that thread could unravel a whole tapestry that you have created around you. And so in the first few months in Canada, I really felt that nobody wanted to talk to me about what was happening. And I think there was a certain reticence to do that, because at first I took it rather personally. It's like, how could they not want to know how this last year and a half of my life went? But I came to appreciate that I think they're just not ready for it. They're not ready to really open up to an alternative view of life. And I felt, especially for my family, they were waiting for me to get back to a normal life. Okay, you know, she's gone. She's done her walk for peace. Yeah, that's all great. You know, now she's ready to settle down, get a job, and, you know, have a family and get back into the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that pressure more in Canada than, or in Ottawa or in Toronto, than I did in Spain. And in Spain, I really hear, especially in the south, everything is a little bit more relaxed. And I really felt that this would be a good environment to kind of decompress and really come to terms and come to an understanding of what had happened in those 2 years, really, because I did the Camino and then the walk to Jerusalem. That's like almost 2 years of my life that I really needed to come to terms with. And so the time in Spain was really good for me. And because of it, we also attracted people, many people that were of like mind. Especially here, we saw that there were people that really had the same kinds of questions and the same
inquietudes.
In Spanish, that's like the same kind of the questioning, the questing, the wanting to know, the seeking. And so we found ourselves in a circle of people that were of like mind, you know. And so with them, we were able to question even more and speak even more and try to come to understanding.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that taught to us the way to Jerusalem is something that I knew, or I believe it before, but having walked for all these different countries and all these different situations, this had confirmed to me that I think the world, all we are a big family.
Mm.
I think all we are very similar to each other, that can change the culture, can change our way of thinking, can change the clothes that you wear or what you eat, but deeply inside we are all the same. I think that all of us, how we were talking about the pilgrimage of life, I think all of us, brothers and sisters in this beautiful world, all we are walking the same way, the way of self-discovery, mm-hmm. the way of discover what is life, why we are here, who we are really. And then this experience of to see that so much more clear, because in any country that we have been, we have seen that. We have talked with people with so many different costumbres.
Yeah, cultures, ways of thinking, perspectives.
But you say, okay, this is my brother. This guy is like me. I had the same desires for peace, for love, for happiness, you know? And that is, I think, the great teaching or confirmation of that all we are walking the same path.
Yeah.
And all we are walking to towards the same direction, wherever it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, too, part of the journey of each one of us, I know for me, is to continue to be authentic in what I believe,
totally.
You know? Mm. And there are so many pressures around to conform, to follow what, you know, others believe is the correct path for you with all, you know, their best intentions and all the love, the greatest love that they have for you. They really don't know you as well as you know yourself. And so you, the work, I think, for me, especially being back, you know, I'll call it the normal world, is to remain loyal to your beliefs and to who you are and to continue to live and to practice those values that define who you are. And being authentic is, I think, one of the greatest gifts that you can offer the world, no matter where you are.
Thank you. Wow, that last part that you just shared, it's such a gift, I think, to all of us on the call.
Thank you, Manisha.
Thank you.
Remind us. We actually are approaching the end of the call. There is one more person in the queue. I wasn't sure, Moni and Alberto, if you were on a time constraint or if you could take one more question.
Of course, of course. We're happy to.
Moni and Alberto, this is Vinya calling. You know, I was about to ask you what your first experience on the very first day of your walk was, but that question is so irrelevant now after hearing your talk just now. It's you just go with the flow and you take what comes in. You answered my question so beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're
so welcome, Vinya.
Okay. Well, you know, you've imparted so much wisdom, and you know, you've shared your hearts with us on this call, and it means so much to us. And we want to know, you know, how can we serve you, you know, as individuals, as a noble community, as part of service space? What can we do for you?
Well, you know, you are doing already with that you are doing, and with that possibility that you are offering to people that you are doing. You are doing great. We feel grateful to be here.
Yeah,
really.
Truly.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you to you guys.
Just the fact that you've asked us to participate and to be, you know, to be open to our journey and to want to listen and to hear about what it is that we, you know, that we're trying to say, that means so much to us. I mean, that even that is creating ripples.
Yeah.
Ripple effects that
totally.
We can't even begin to imagine, you know? And so, I don't know, I feel like we, like you said earlier, we are with brothers and sisters, and that this is part of a circle that we are all sharing. And I think the sharing really brings up, like inspires, brings up the level of peace and just intensifies all that it is that we, that is positive, that we want to bring into the world. And so we see you as kind of intensifiers.
Yes, totally.
Love intensifiers. Peace intensifiers. I can't think of it. It just came to me. It's like you're
awesome.
Kind of, you're taking this, you know, simple message that we have and this experience that we have lived, and you're just intensifying it for us and multiplying it to effect. And so we couldn't ask for anything greater, you know?
Yeah.
We're asking how we can serve you, and your response is that we are intensifying your love. Like, that's just amazing. So beautiful. Thank you. And what a beautiful way to close the call. And I'd like to just have a minute of gratitude.
Yeah.
Yes.